He's been searching for your mom for about 2 weeks. So far, he's believed to have killed 3 people during the course of his search. Tom pulled out a chair and sunk into it, his face ashen.
But...
Max covered Tom's hand with his own, his heart racing and skipping. 3 people. The bastards killed 3 people. And he has Caroline. Oh, God. Please. Evie Wilson? She's... Spinelli shook his head. Still alive. But we do have a few clues. We found the rental car he'd been driving abandoned at a rest stop in northern Indiana a few hours ago. Are you sure? Max asked, straightening in his chair. Spinelli nodded. Yeah. He leaned forward, focusing his grave attention on Tom. We found the body of an old man in the trunk, Tom. Caucasian, balding, beard, about 75.
Tom's chin quivered. Mr. Edelman, he wasn't on the step. I was going to check on him. I thought maybe he'd fallen and hurt himself. I forgot to check when I found out Mom was gone.
Spinelli nodded again. He matches the description of the elderly man my men talked to yesterday morning. We found something else, something a little more encouraging. Your mom's resourceful, Tom. Apparently they stopped at a gas station outside of Lexington, Kentucky. Your mom left a message in the bathroom stall rolled up in the toilet paper. Gave her name, that she'd been kidnapped by Rob Winters, and that whoever found it should contact me. Somebody did.
Tom's swallow was audible. He's headed south. Back to North Carolina.
That was my take, but we're confused. We've been working with Special Agent Thatcher and Lieutenant Ross in Asheville. They're convinced he's after you, not your mom. That he's obsessed with finding you. Do you know where he'd take her, Tom?
Tom's head wagged wearily. I don't know. The house.
We've got surveillance there. He'll know that. Can you think of any other place?
Tom shook his head, his expression one of helpless frustration.
Max looked at his watch. How far is Asheville?
Max, David started, then moved his shoulders in acceptance. Let's go.
Spinelli frowned. I don't suppose it'd do any good to tell you you'd be more used to us here.
I didn't think so.
He reached for Murphy's notepad and scrawled a name and number. Call Special Agent Stephen Thatcher. He's the primary on this case in Asheville.
There's a case? Tom asked. What kind of case?
Spinelli's mustache bent down. 2 weeks ago, the case was reopened as a homicide. Yours, young man. Don't make it come true. Don't do anything stupid, okay?
Tom took the piece of paper and folded it into precise thirds. Let's go, Max.
Max shook his head forcefully. No way. There is no way I'll allow you to leave Chicago. Your mother'll have my head if I put you in any danger.
Tom stood, his face still alarmingly pale, but with a poise and resolute dignity that belied his years. Every minute we argue is time we could have been on the road.
He held out his hand to Spinelli.
Thank you for your help, sir. Is there any way you can hold Mr. Edelman's body until me and my mom come back? He was like family. He didn't have anybody else.
Spinelli shook Tom's offered hand, a look of respect on his face.
I'll do my best, Tom. Drive safely and give my regards to Thatcher and Ross.
Asheville, Monday, March 19th, 7 a.m. The morning was quiet, dark in the hours just before dawn. The only sounds Winters could hear were the drumming of his own fingers on the steering wheel and the low murmur of his police scanner as he watched the street for any sign of Sue Ann. That she'd come was not even a question in his mind. That she'd come alone remained to be seen. He needed some cash. His credit cards had all been denied. All of them, even the ones in his alias names. His lips firmed as his anger simmered. They knew. They knew his aliases. They'd been in his house, disturbed his things. Thatcher was behind this. Of that he was certain.
Thatcher would pay, as would Ross. He reached to turn up the volume on the police scanner just as Sue Ann's battered Chevy pulled into view. Winters slouched down in the seat of the dirty white panel van he'd picked up at the Virginia-North Carolina border. He'd changed cars twice along the way. It had added a bit of time to the trip, but it was a worthwhile diversion. Sue Ann's Chevy turned into the convenience store parking lot where he'd told her to wait. He took a quick look at the back of the van, meeting Mary Grace's unwavering stare, and felt his anger rise from a simmer to a boil. She'd surprised him, staring him down and refusing to comply. She'd changed, and he'd overestimated the ease with which he'd be able to bend her to his will. No problem. She thought she was strong. Mary Grace actually thought she was a match for him. He smiled coldly, gratified to see her throat work beneath the duct tape that half covered her face as she swallowed hard. He'd get what he wanted from her. He had ways. He smiled, thinking of all those ways. Winters returned his attention to the parking lot where Sue Ann got out of her car and walked into the store, just as he'd instructed. A few minutes later, she came out with a cup of coffee, just as he'd instructed. He tuned his ear to the police scanner. Through the static, he heard his suspicions confirmed. They reported the subject of the surveillance had arrived at the rendezvous point. They'd known Sue Ann would be coming. Either Sue Ann had betrayed him, or they'd tapped his home phone. Sue Ann would never dare open her trap. Of this he was certain. On top of being too stupid to live, the woman was spineless, properly set in her place. No. The betrayal had come from within the police. His former brothers, men he'd stood with for years, men he'd supported in countless calls against crime throughout the city. They were waiting for him, ready to take him away as if he were some common crackhead on the street. Ross was behind this, he was sure of it. But his brothers had followed. They were his brothers no longer. In disgust, Winters put the van in reverse and pulled away from his watching place, a half block from the convenience store where Sue Ann would wait until she was taken in for questioning. He drove until he reached an abandoned house far away from the convenience store and his own home, pulled into the driveway, rolled down the van window, and reached into the mailbox, and smiled. He drew out an envelope, thick with the cash Sue Ann had found in his home strongbox, and paid her squinty-eyed nephew to drop in this out-of-sight mailbox. Good girl, he thought, counting the cash. It would have to be enough for now.
We're heading out, Mary Grace, he called to the back of the van. I think we'll head west. It's been a long time since you've been to the cabin.
Caroline let her eyes slide closed for just a moment as some of the hope drained from her heart. The cabin. It was remote, isolated, and Rob's secret getaway. It had belonged to Rob's father, a vicious, uncaring man. When his father died, he'd left it to Rob. It was a place Rob had taken her only a few times, usually preferring to go by himself. No one would know where she was. No one would know where to rescue her. She'd have to find a way to escape on her own. No, not on her own, not anymore. Now there was someone else to consider, to protect. Caroline opened her eyes and stared into the murky gray in the back of the van, only to see a wide-eyed little face staring back. A thin strip of freckles could be seen above the silver duct tape half covering his little face. Must-red hair stood on end. He still wore his Spider-Man pajamas. The boy had been taken from his bed, mouth taped, hands and feet bound. She had no idea who the child was, nor why Rob was so energized by the child's capture. She turned her body so that her own bound foot could rub against his small leg. Desperately, he moved his leg to bump closer to her before blinking, sending a stream of tears down his little face.
Chapter 22. Asheville, Monday, March 19th, 9 a.m.
What the hell is all of this?
David exploded when he found yet another downtown Asheville street blocked by a chanting crowd. It was pandemonium, just shy of a full-fledged riot. David edged Max's Mercedes along the road, congested with people. Some held signs decrying police brutality. Almost all the faces were black. Every face was hard and angry. Max pulled his cell phone from his pocket and punched in the number he'd used to talk with Special Agent Stephen Thatcher every other hour during the night.
We're two blocks from the police station, Thatcher, but we can't get any closer. You got a damn riot on the street.
I know, Thatcher replied shortly. I'll send a cruiser to meet you and escort you the rest of the way. Have you eaten?
No. Max looked behind him to the back seat. Are you hungry, Tom?
Tom's eyes remained locked on the crowd outside his window.
No.
You need to eat, son, David said mildly.
I'd throw it up,
Tom responded woodenly, still focused on the scene outside.
No thanks, Max said into his phone and told Thatcher where they currently were parked. 5 minutes later, a cruiser appeared and cut a path through the chanting crowd, and lights flashing led David, Max, and Tom to the police station parking lot. Max got out of the front passenger seat, holding back his groan. His hip ached, his head throbbed, and sharp pains arced up his spine. They'd chosen to drive as the earliest flight out of Chicago arrived in Asheville after 10:30. Getting here an hour and a half earlier was worth every minute of the discomfort he'd endured during the 12-hour drive. Tom got out behind him and wordlessly handed him his cane. He'd shared precious few words with the boy during the drive. He now clasped Tom's shoulder, and the two of them walked up the stairs together, Tom slowing his stride to account for Max's difficulty. David was first up the stairs and held the door open for the other two.
"Where can we find Special Agent Thatcher?"
Max asked the uniformed officer at the front desk. It was surreal somehow. Just knowing that 24 hours before, his life had been on the verge of perfect. He'd held Caroline in his arms, his marriage proposals still a beautiful dream. And now? He shook his head, refusing the horrific image's entry into his mind. Caroline needed him sharp. Tom needed him strong. He'd let himself fall apart when she was safely back in his arms. When? When?
Upstairs, the officer answered, eyeing them all, but especially Tom, with obvious interest. His eyes noted Max's cane. Elevator's off to the right.
A low roar met his ears as the elevator opened, immediately quieting when they stepped into the detective's bullpen. Max noticed the curious stares following Tom as they walked across the room, and realized many of these policemen had searched for him 7 years before, believing him kidnapped or dead. Three people emerged from the office at the end of the open room, two tall, broad-shouldered men, one with red hair, the other with blonde. A woman stood between them and met his eyes with sympathy. The red-haired man stepped forward, extending his right hand.
"I'm Special Agent Thatcher of the State Bureau of Investigation. This is Lieutenant Ross and Detective Lambert."
He met Max's gaze, and surprise registered in his eyes.
"Lakers?"
Max nodded. "Another lifetime ago.
Have you found Caroline?"
Thatcher shook his head. "No, but we did pick up Winters' current girlfriend." He glanced from the corner of his eye at Tom.
"I'm sorry, son. You must be..."
Tom's lips pursed.
"Tom Stewart."
Thatcher raised a surprised brow at the ferocity in Tom's voice.
"Okay, Tom it is. Winters' girlfriend's name is Sue Ann Broughton. She's..."
Thatcher glanced at Tom again. "She's pregnant with Winters' baby, but he doesn't know it. She refuses to tell us where he is, although he contacted her to meet him this morning."
Tom stiffened.
"Then he's here?"
Thatcher sighed.
"He was here. He must have known we'd be watching. He slipped through our net."
David walked over to a window overlooking the street and the angry crowd that was in true danger of becoming a mob.
"What's with the riot?"
Lieutenant Ross stepped forward.
As we were investigating the disappearance of Mary Grace and Robbie,
she raised a brow in Tom's direction, cutting off the boy's protest.
That's what it's been for 2 weeks, son. Anyway, as we investigated your disappearance, we found evidence that your father had used undue force while questioning a young African-American suspect.
She regarded Tom steadily.
The suspect was found dead.
Tom's lip curled in disdain.
Only one?
Ross seemed taken aback.
What does that mean? First, he's not my father, Lieutenant Ross. Second, he drank. When he drank, he talked. I was only a little kid, but I knew he'd killed.
Tom narrowed his eyes and looked from Ross to Thatcher to Lambert, who still stood quietly to one side.
What are you doing to find him? What are you doing to make sure he doesn't kill my mother?
Thatcher half sat on the corner of a desk. We don't know where he's taken her. We want you to try to remember any place he might go. Tom shoved his hand through his short blonde hair.
I was 7 years old, he said with barely controlled frustration. I'll tell you the same thing I told Spinelli.
Thatcher held up his hand. I already talked to Spinelli. He was impressed with your maturity. I expect to see it now. I need your help, Tom. I want to find your mom alive as much as you do. I want you to come with me to your old house, help us look for anything that might be a clue to where you fought, where Winters has gone. Tom paled, then drew a breath and looked up at Max.
I can't go back there, Max,
he whispered.
I can't.
Max's heart tightened, knowing what Tom and Caroline had experienced in that house. He curled his hand around Tom's upper arm and squeezed. I won't leave you, Tom. I promise. Tom dropped his chin to his chest, then straightened his spine and squared his shoulders.
Okay. Let's go.
Thatcher turned to Lieutenant Ross. Can you spare me, Jonathan? I know you need to stay here to manage the... He gestured to the window. Ross looked over at the window and nodded.
Go. But call me if anything comes up.
Asheville, Monday, March 19th, 10 a.m.
Is he all right?
David whispered. Max watched as Tom wandered about the small living room, half-dazed, touching knick-knacks, pictures, a vase here, a trophy there. What was he remembering? What horrors were filling his mind? No, Max murmured. He's not. He glanced over to see Thatcher and Lambert standing just inside the front door.
I wish he didn't have to do this, David.
David shrugged uneasily.
That's why he came. He wanted to help find his mother.
Max's heart constricted, then rose to stick in his throat.
I want to find his mother,
he whispered hoarsely as Tom sank into a chair, clutching a photo of a little boy holding up a stringer of fish. Max picked up another picture, only to stare down at a somber teenaged Caroline holding a smiling toddler, her expressive eyes haunted and scared. A wave of reality hit, and with it a fear so immense it cut him at the knees. She'd lived here. He'd hurt her here. He could be hurting her right now. He might be doing the same thing to her that he did to all those other women. She might be dead. He might never see her again. Shaking, Max made it to the nearest chair and let his body drop into it, covering his face with his hands. The last words she'd heard him say were, "Just go." Desperately, he wished them back.
We have to find her, David. Max's voice broke. I can't. There was a cabin,
Tom said suddenly. Max looked up to find Tom still clutching the picture, a faraway expression on his pale face.
What did you say?
Tom seemed to jerk himself from his reverie. He turned sharp eyes to Thatcher and Lambert.
There was a cabin, up in the mountains. He took me there a few times. Sometimes we'd go hunting.
He winced, remembering.
I hated hunting.
Suddenly his voice weakened, and he sounded like a small boy.
I hated killing a deer. I'd beg him not to kill the baby deer's mother.
Tom swallowed.
He'd laugh at me. Tell me not to be a flaming faggot.
He swallowed again, audibly.
That little blood had toughened me up.
He was quiet for a moment, and Max felt his world tilt as he willed Tom to remember something, anything, that would lead them to Caroline.
Sometimes we'd go fishing.
Tom held the picture so they could see it. Young Robbie Winters stared from the photo, holding the stringer of fish far away from his smileless face.
This was my fifth birthday. I didn't catch anything. These are his fish. He caught them and made me hold them.
He closed his eyes.
Told me I could at least pretend I was a man. Sometimes he'd go there.
He paused, his lips working, but no sound emerging. He cleared his throat.
Sometimes he'd go there after he...
He stood and turned from the group, watching him avidly.
Sometimes, after he'd hit my mother, he'd go away for a few days, up to the cabin. He didn't want to look at her, he'd say. She was ugly, useless. He would go, and I would wish he'd never come back.
His shoulders sagged.
But he always came back,
he whispered brokenly.
Always.
Do you know where this cabin is, Tom? Thatcher asked him, tension making his voice hard. Tom's back went rigid, and he seemed to pause. Max waited, his breath stuck in his throat, hoping Tom would say of course and lead the way. Instead, Tom shook his head.
No,
he answered softly. Too softly.
It took a long time to get there, I remember. But I don't remember where.
Max's gut rolled. Winters was out there somewhere, and they didn't know where. He could be hurting her that very moment. He tightened his hands into fists. He was helpless to do anything. Damn it all to hell. Then Tom turned and met Max's gaze, his blue eyes filled with guilt and anguish and fear.
I'm sorry, Max,
he whispered, his voice so childlike that it broke Max's heart yet again.
I'm so sorry. He has my mom, and I can't find her. Max, please do something. He'll kill her.
The last was choked out, barely audible, but it brought Max to his feet. Max stood and stretched out his hand, nearly wincing when Tom gripped it hard enough to make his joints snap. He tugged, and Caroline's son threw himself into his embrace.
I'm sorry, Max,
he cried, and Max rocked him gently.
I promised her I'd take care of her, and I didn't.
Shh. Max patted his back and looked to David for support. His brother only nodded, and Max understood the words would have to come from him. He dug deep and found them, made himself believe them. This isn't your fault, Tom. Your mom is strong. She survived him before. She's strong. Don't forget that. Max turned his own eyes to Thatcher, who stood by the door, his expression grim. Do something, Max said quietly. It was not a request. Thatcher's jaw went taut.
Get a listing of any real estate owned by Winters or any of his family members, he instructed Lambert.
His cell phone jingled and he pulled it from his pocket.
Then call Tony and tell her we have a lead. He held the phone to his ear. Tony, we were just...
Max watched as every ounce of color drained from Thatcher's face. His heart stopped and Tom pulled away, feeling him tense.
What's wrong? Max demanded.
Tom went a shade paler. Thatcher said nothing. It was as if he'd completely disconnected.
Lambert shook him. Thatcher, what is it?
He pulled the phone from Thatcher's limp hand.
Tony, what's happened?
Lambert, too, grew pale.
No. When? And the older boys?
He closed his eyes.
I thought they had 24/7 protection on his house.
He visibly got control of himself. Tony, Tom Stewart remembers a cabin. Can you check on any property Winters owns in the mountains?
He disconnected and pulled Thatcher to the sofa and pushed him down, then looked over at Tom and Max.
Agent Thatcher's 6-year-old is missing. Someone stole him from his bed and gave Stephen's aunt a hypo full of sedative. His teenagers woke up and found the little boy gone and the officer on duty dead by the back door. Winters was at Stephen's house last week, talking to his little boy.
Lambert grasped Thatcher's chin and tugged his face until Thatcher looked up.
We'll find him, Stephen, before he can hurt your son.
Thatcher blinked, his expression wooden.
He hurt his own son, Jonathan. Why wouldn't he hurt my baby?
For a long moment, nobody said anything. Then David cleared his throat.
We need to find that cabin, David said quietly.
Would the girlfriend know where it is?
If she does, she sure as hell better tell me.
Stephen gritted, his fist clenched.
Lambert shook his head. No, Stephen, you're in no position to talk to her now. You go back to the station. I'll talk to Sue Ann.
His face tightened.
We'll find him, Stephen, and we'll get Nikki back.
I want to talk to this girlfriend, Tom said, his voice even and strong once more.
I need to talk to her, Detective Lambert, please.
Lambert nodded.
All right, then. Tom, you and yours are with me. Stephen, I'll drop you off at the station and take these folks to the Justice Center to visit Miss Broughton.
Western North Carolina, Monday, March 19th, 10:30 a.m. Caroline let her body sag against the hard, dirty floor. Her head throbbed, but she carefully controlled the tears that clogged her throat. If she cried, her nose would be too closed to breathe, and her mouth was still covered by the thick silver duct tape. She drew in a breath through her nose, stifling the cough that threatened to rob her of vital air. Every breath she drew brought in a lungful of dust. Every breath she drew was torture. She rolled over and squinted through the small cloud of dirt that rose and fell. He was still breathing, the little boy with no name. He had to be having the same trouble breathing, but he'd made not a single sound since they'd arrived in this hellhole Rob considered Shangri-La. Rob was asleep for the moment. After driving from Chicago to Raleigh to Asheville to the mountain cabin, he'd been tired. But he'd still found the energy to begin her retraining, as he'd called it. She'd take back every bad thing she'd ever said about him. She'd tell his son she'd lied. She'd tell the police he'd never laid a hand on her. She'd tell the police she'd stolen their son and run away to whore herself for a mere $20 a lay. She'd tell the police he'd never laid a hand on her. Caroline would have smiled at that if her lips weren't held immobile by the damn duct tape. She'd be happy to tell the police he'd never laid a hand on her. She'd sit there and look the district attorney square in the eye and tell him she'd never had a black eye or a split lip. She'd tell him that and watch the DA look with shocked revulsion at her face, her bruised and battered face. Rob was losing his touch. He'd neglected to consider that she needed to have a bruise-free face at a minimum before she defended him of the charge of spousal abuse. He'd neglected to consider that quite often over the last few hours, she thought, her ribs aching from the blows he'd delivered with the sharp tips of his boots. He'd remember it sooner or later, but until he did, every bruise meant at least 2 more days before he could come out of hiding and demand she spout his lies. 2 more days until he could come out of hiding and find Tom. 2 more days for Tom to hide. Caroline looked at the little form huddled in the fetal position in the corner of the dirty room. 2 more days that the little boy's family worried about him, whoever they were. She sighed, blowing the air through her nose, not wanting to think about the psychological damage already done to the child, but unable to keep from it. He'd been stolen from his bed, tied like an animal, and repeatedly watched her battered every time she shook her head defiantly at Rob's demands. It was no wonder he was curled in a fetal position. It hurt a child to watch another human being hurt. Tom would never be the same, having watched her suffer for years at Rob's hand.
She would never be the same after having watched her own mother battered by her own father. As she lay on the floor gathering her strength, she debated the wisdom of her strategy. Maybe she'd give in to Rob's demands, only for the sake of the little boy whose name she didn't know. She'd consider it. For now, they had 2 or 3 days of hiding out here in the middle of nowhere. For the moment, they had a few hours of peace. Rob was sleeping. She could hear his snores clearly through the thin wall separating the front room from the bedroom with its rickety bed. A few hours would have to be enough. Asheville, Monday, March 19th, 11 a.m. Tony met Stephen at the elevator, her face determined.
We're searching, Stephen. I've got search parties in the air and a team working to find his cabin. We'll find your son.
Stephen managed a curt nod as he followed Tony to her office. Every nerve ending was numb, simply numb. His baby. That bastard had stolen his baby. He looked around the bullpen to find the eye of every officer trained on his face. Every eye sympathetic. They believed Winters was the bad guy. Finally. It took that bastard stealing his son to make these assholes finally see the sun in broad daylight. It took the sight of their sympathy too late to make him snap. Rage rushed through him, and he stopped walking. Deliberately, he met the eyes of every man that just 2 weeks before had regarded him with open hostility and distrust because he had the unmitigated gall to accuse one of their local darlings of spousal abuse. They'd known Winters. They'd known his wife. They must have seen something. Somebody must have seen something. You're hypocritical bastards, every last one of you, Stephen gritted through clenched teeth. Tony pulled on his arm.
Stephen, this is neither the time nor...
Stephen shook her hand off his arm and addressed the room at large. You knew him. You saw him in action. You knew his wife. You must have seen her wear sunglasses in the winter, long-sleeved blouses in the summer. He spun around and glared at a detective whose nameplate read G. West. You, West, did you know Mary Grace Winters? West dropped his eyes. Yes. Did you see her with bruises ever? West lifted his eyes, and Stephen saw them fill with guilt. Yes. Rob said she was clumsy. And you believed him, Stephen sliced with sarcasm. You believed him, didn't you? West dropped his eyes. Yes. Then you're just as guilty, Stephen hissed. He raked the room with his angry glare, but not one man could meet his eyes. All of you're guilty. So what will you do about it? He clenched his fist and fought to swallow the lump that was building in his throat. Because you didn't do anything then, he's killed maybe 3 people, maybe more. Because you didn't do anything then, he now has his wife in his hands once again. He slapped his hand down on the nearest desk and its occupant jumped. He has my son in his hands, God damn it! His voice broke and he didn't care. So tell me, what will you do about it now? Not a soul spoke, and Stephen hung his head in dejected defeat.
Come on, Stephen,
Tony urged, her voice gentle. Wait. Stephen turned to find one of the detectives visibly trembling where he stood by his desk. It was Crowley, the detective who'd driven a drunken Ben Jolly home on his first day in Asheville. 2 weeks ago. When his baby was still safe and Winters was just a name in a file. What, Crowley?
You're right. Crowley drew a deep breath. Mostly. I knew Mary Grace. I knew Robbie. I thought I knew Rob. I was wrong. I knew Rob was a bully and he could be rough during questioning. But I never thought he could kill in cold blood. I never saw Mary Grace with any bruises, but honestly, I never really looked. I never suspected Rob could be...
Stephen waited.
Evil,
Crowley finished with a small shrug. A few heads around him nodded.
I didn't help then because I didn't know. I know now. I never went to the cabin with Rob. I didn't know him that well, but Jolly did.
The tiny hairs rose on the back of Stephen's neck. He looked over to Ben Jolly's empty desk. Where is he?
Home,
Tony offered.
He took leave after Spinelli found the dead prostitute. He needed time to process. I let him have the time. He'll come up before the disciplinary board soon enough.
She pointed to Crowley.
Jim, I want you to bring him in. If he's got a map, bring it with you.
Crowley stood and pulled on his jacket.
I'll likely have to dry him out first. I saw him at Two Point Tavern last night and he was falling down drunk. I had to drive him home.
Tony pursed her lips.
Then pour some coffee down his throat and sober him up. But get him in here as fast as you can.
She turned to Stephen.
Your aunt called me from the hospital in Raleigh. She said she's fine and not to worry about her, to concentrate on finding Nicky.
Amazingly, Stephen found his lips curving in a smile. She's some woman, my Aunt Helen. Asheville, Monday, March 19th, 11:15 a.m. Miss Broughton. Max found himself pleading brokenly and was beyond caring. He wanted to grab the woman and shake her until he rattled loose the truth, and was almost beyond caring that she was also Winter's victim. He clenched his fist on the worn tabletop of the Justice Center interview room and pounded once.
If you have any decency, you'll tell us where he's hiding. For God's sake, where is that cabin?
Sue Ann Broughton sat at the interview table, her hair tangled and dirty, her eyes fixed on the tabletop. She refused to look at them. Any of them.
I want a lawyer,
she whispered, barely loud enough to hear. Detective Lambert shook his head.
You're not under arrest, Miss Broughton. You're free to hire a lawyer at your own expense, but I'm not required to provide one under the law until you've been arrested.
Sue Ann lifted weary eyes.
Then why can't I go home?
Lambert never moved a facial muscle.
Because you're being held as a material witness. We've been over this several times before.
He casually rested his arm on the table.
I can, however, charge you with aiding and abetting a suspected felon.
Rob didn't kill those women,
she protested, but the words were obviously born of fear rather than true confidence.
He didn't.
Lambert merely raised a brow. He told you this?
Sue Ann glared.
You know he did. You bugged our phone. That's the only way you could have known he was meeting me this morning.
Lambert shrugged.
Then you also know that we know the two of you arranged some sort of money drop. You gave him cash to run on. That's aiding and abetting a suspected felon.
He eyed Sue Ann sharply, and Max felt a small glimmer of hope. Maybe Lambert could get through to Sue Ann. Maybe Sue Ann would tell them where they could find Caroline.
Now, Sue Ann, you don't want your baby to be born in prison, do you?
Sue Ann paled.
No, you can't put me in jail.
Her hand instinctively splayed across her abdomen.
You can't.
Lambert shrugged again.
No, but a jury of your peers can and will. It's not a chance I'd be keen on taking if I were you. So you can tell me what I want to know, or I can go to the district attorney with what I know. It's your choice.
Lambert stopped and watched Sue Ann's face change expressions as the woman fought with herself and her fear of Winters. Max glanced from the corner of his eye as Tom leaned forward, his face ashen.
Miss Broughton,
Tom's voice was gravelly.
You're having a baby.
He cleared his throat.
Do you want him living with a father that will hurt him?
Sue Ann shook her head, her eyes bright with tears.
Rob would never hurt a child.
Tom shook his head.
No, ma'am. You're wrong.
Slowly he stood and began unbuttoning his shirt.
He hits you? I know he must.
His voice had grown dull, monotone. He hit my mother. Another few buttons slipped from their buttonholes. He hit me.
Yes, he did,
Tom insisted when Suin began to shake her head vigorously.
He hit me with fists. He kicked me with his boots.
Tom swallowed as he pulled his shirt tail from his waistband, exposing the fine blonde hairs just beginning to cover his chest, and again Max was struck at once by Tom's youth and his maturity.
But it got worse, Suin.
He shrugged one arm from its sleeve.
One day, he hit my mom into a wall, and she was unconscious. He was about to kick her again, and I leaned down on top of her.
He didn't take his eyes from Suan's face.
I was 6 years old, and all I could think about was protecting my mom. She was crippled and walked with a walker. He was about to kick her ribs in.
Tom held up his arm.
Look close, Suan.
Max looked and felt his stomach roil. Scars, faint and round, lined the inside of Tom's arm, starting about 3 inches from his shoulder and proceeding to his armpit, evenly spaced. Suan paled and dropped her eyes to the table.
I said look close, Suan,
Tom snapped, his tone one of instant authority. Suan looked up, her eyes filled with horrified tears.
My mom doesn't even know about these. I've hidden them for years. If she knew, she'd hate herself, and I don't want that to happen. But hear me, Suan. The man you're protecting burned me with a cigarette for trying to protect my mother. I was 6 years old. Do you really think he'll treat your child with any more respect?
Trembling, Suan dropped her eyes back to the tabletop, and a long, agonizing minute passed as she rocked herself, her arms locked across her abdomen as if the action could protect her unborn child. Finally, she raised her eyes, and in them, Max saw defeat.
No,
she whispered hoarsely.
Give me a pencil. I'll draw you the best map I can.
Lambert stood and tapped on the two-way mirror. A uniformed officer appeared in the doorway as he bent to write on his notepad. Lambert ripped off the note, leaving the ragged edge fluttering in pieces.
Call Lieutenant Ross with this message. I need backup sent to this location.
He turned to Max and Tom.
I'm afraid you'll have to stay here.
Tom shook his head, his jaw taut.
No, we're going. I may be the only one who can get through to him, if he's as obsessed with finding me as everyone says.
Max stood and grabbed his cane.
Every minute we argue are minutes we could be finding Winters. Please, Detective Lambert, let's not waste any more time.
Lambert regarded them with an even stare before inclining his head.
Let's go. But don't make me sorry I said yes. When we get there, you stay in the car.
Western North Carolina, Monday, March 19th, 11:30 a.m. She'd taken matters into her own hands, so to speak, her first step to regain use of her hands. She'd found the tool in the jagged edge of the aluminum frame of the window screen. It took her precious minutes of scrunching and rolling caterpillar style to get to it. It took her even longer to position her body so the jagged edge rubbed against the twine binding her hands behind her back. Midway through her struggles, which she tried to keep as silent as possible, the little boy rolled around and opened his eyes, watching her every move. Caroline took a deep breath through her nose and gingerly winked the eye that was least swollen, trying to give the child some hope. He winked back, and she found giving hope went both ways. She rubbed the strands of twine harder against the aluminum, finding a rhythm, until finally the effort paid off. The twine snapped. Her hands were free. Trembling, she pulled the tape from her mouth and took a great gulp, filling her lungs with musty air that seemed sweeter than that of a spring meadow. Keeping the tape, she crawled over to the child, whose eyes were now bright and interested. Gently, she pulled the tape from his mouth. He, too, drew a deep breath.
Who are you, honey?
Caroline whispered.
Nikki. Nikki Thatcher.
He whispered back.
My daddy is a policeman.
Caroline glanced over at the door between the two rooms of the cabin, wondering what role the boy's daddy had in this whole nightmare, what he'd done to make him a target of the formidable Rob Winters. If the boy's daddy was a good cop or a bad one, that didn't really matter. Freeing this baby was her first priority.
Are you a brave boy, Nicky?
He nodded soberly.
Then this is what I want you to do.
Chapter 23. I-40 towards Blowing Rock, North Carolina, Monday, March 19th, 12:30 p.m. How much further? Stephen asked from behind clenched teeth. If he didn't hold his teeth tight together, they'd chatter pathetically. He was past the point of caring if anyone else heard the chatter, but somehow felt that hearing it himself would be the straw that pushed him over the edge.
Another half hour, Jolly answered, his speech still the slightest bit slurred.
Detective Crowley had been working to sober him up for the last hour, hoping he would be more lucid once they got closer to Winters' cabin. Ross glanced over from the driver's seat, disapproval and worry etched into her face.
When we get there, you stay in the car. I'm serious, Stephen. You're off this case until we find your son.
You can't take me off this case, Tony, Stephen replied evenly, knowing she was trying to help. Ross's lips pursed, knowing he was right.
Give Ben another cup of coffee, Jim. I want him sharpened up sometime in the next 30 minutes.
Crowley poured another cup of coffee strong enough to peel wallpaper.
Drink up, Ben.
Monday, March 19th, 12:45 a.m. Caroline's head jerked up when she heard a loud thump from the bedroom. He was awake. Damn. She glanced down at Nicky Thatcher's wide, frightened brown eyes. He'd heard it, too. She had a minute more, not enough to finish, especially as her own ankles were still bound. And if Rob found him like this, he'd be even angrier. She fought back the shudder as she thought about the punishment that would inevitably follow. She abruptly changed her strategy. She flexed her swollen fingers and checked her work, confirming that she'd loosened the twine just enough for Nicky to wriggle his hands free. She'd already freed his feet, and now she looped enough twine around them to appear tied from a distance of 4 or 5 feet. She retrieved the duct tape she'd pulled from Nicky's mouth, and the little boy shook his head frantically, pitifully.
No,
he whispered, his eyes filling with tears.
Please don't. I can't breathe with that on.
Caroline glanced over her shoulder as footsteps thudded across the floor. Panic skittered down her spine, making her body shudder.
He's coming, honey. I have to put it back on, but I'll make it loose.
She laid it lightly against his face, covering his trembling lips. She brushed a fleeting caress across his wet cheek.
See, you can breathe through this little pocket. Now curl up and pretend you're asleep. Do not open your eyes. And whatever happens to me, don't look. Pretend you're somewhere else, like Disney World. Have you ever been there?
He nodded, a small nod.
Then pretend you're on your favorite ride. And if he takes me back to the other room, wiggle free, sneak out, and do what I told you to do. Do you understand me?
He nodded, resolutely blinking his tears away, and Caroline felt her heart tumble.
You're a brave boy. I'll make sure I tell your daddy how very brave you've been. Now I'm going to move away from you. I have to hurry.
She touched the top of his red head.
Courage, Nicky.
She'd just made it back to the window when the door opened and Rob appeared, red-eyed, his hair tangled, his cheeks dark with stubble. His red eyes widened, then narrowed.
You little bitch, he chuckled, trying to escape.
He strode across the room, grabbed her arm, smiled when she winced.
I bet you think you're pretty smart, although I must admit you're smarter than I thought.
He twisted his hand in her hair and yanked her head back, exposing her throat.
But don't let it go to your head, Mary Grace. I thought you were dumber than a post. Now maybe you've matched the post. This little escape stunt of yours shows just how little you considered the consequences of your actions.
He tightened his fingers in her hair.
Because there will be consequences.
She said nothing, schooled her face to be as expressionless as possible. Once more he yanked her hair, and she winced. Satisfied, he smiled, a mere baring of yellow teeth. Then, as if he'd just remembered the boy's presence, Rob whipped his head to the left to stare at Nikki. After a beat, Caroline allowed her eyes to follow, managing to hide her relief when the little boy stayed huddled in his little fetal ball. Rob relaxed and turned his eyes back to her.
"You can't be quiet forever," he murmured silkily. "At some point you'll talk to me."
He ran his finger down her throat, ending in the valley between her breasts. She couldn't help it, couldn't control the shudder of revulsion. He smiled again, a horrific sight.
"Wife."
And without further comment, he grabbed her around her waist and hauled her body off the ground and under his arm, as if she were no more than a sack of potatoes. A few steps took him into the bedroom. A kick of his foot sent the door slamming shut. Her heart lodged in her throat, and she shoved it back. Knowing what would come next made it all the more terrifying. He would rape her, like he raped Evie. Like he'd raped her countless times during their marriage. It would hurt. She'd feel violated, ashamed, emptied of her very self. It would hurt.
"Oh, God,"
she prayed in her mind.
"Please don't let me scream. Please don't let that little boy out there be more traumatized than he's already been. Please don't let me scream and give Rob the satisfaction of knowing he's succeeded. Please."
Her body landed on the thin mattress where Rob tossed her, her left hip taking most of the impact as the bed frame seemed to cut through the mattress as if it was made of so much air. Max. His face flashed against her clenched eyelids, and it was almost more than she could bear. Where was he? Did he even know she was gone? And even if she managed to escape, would he want her after this? She could survive whatever came next, but could Max?
"Open your eyes, Mary Grace."
Rob's voice was breathy, heavy. The mattress at her side depressed as he sat beside her. Her stomach churned even as she kept her eyes clenched shut. The back of his hand against her jaw came as no real surprise, but still she flinched at the sharp pain, shrinking away from him.
"You are still my wife,"
he snarled, grabbing her jaw and squeezing her cheeks.
"One way or another, you'll stop defying me."
He threw her face back to the hard mattress, and Caroline forced her mind to blank. Lambert brought the car to a stop. A dirt road lay before them, just off the badly paved main road. There was a large boulder to the left of the entrance to the dirt road, just as Sue Ann had said. Max glanced over his shoulder at Tom, sitting in the back seat, his blue eyes intently scanning the trees for any sign of his mother, for any sign of life at all. David had his hand on Tom's back, offering silent support. Max cleared his throat.
"Do you recognize this place, Tom?"
Tom nodded, not taking his eyes from the window.
"I remember climbing on that rock. I didn't want to."
His lips thinned.
"He said I had to prove I wasn't a pussy wimp. I almost fell off."
He tilted his head.
"It's not as big as I remembered it, the rock. I wonder if he is. I wonder if he realizes I'm not as small as I used to be."
He finished, his young voice gone hard and flat. Max gritted his teeth. Somehow he'd thought it would get easier over time dealing with Tom's memories, but each one seemed to slice at his gut. Each memory was a blow Caroline had taken, biding her time until she could escape this son-of-a-bitch monster. Just like she was probably doing right now. He became aware that the car had not moved. "What are you waiting for, detective?" Lambert stared straight ahead at the cabin, barely visible through the trees. Spring had arrived in this part of the country, young green leaves sprouting everywhere. They'd been lucky, Max thought. Another few weeks, and the leaf cover would have been too thick to see the cabin from the main road. They might have driven right by and missed it. Lambert needlessly adjusted the dark sunglasses that hid his eyes.
"I'm trying to decide if I want him to know I'm here or not," he answered and checked his watch. "And I'm wondering where my backup is. My lieutenant should have already been here with a half dozen squad cars."
"Caroline's in there," Max said tightly. "He could be doing anything to her. You have to move now."
Lambert turned to him and removed his glasses carefully. His eyes were sharp, alert, but void of any of the terrified urgency Max felt bubbling inside him.
"I have to follow procedure, Dr. Hunter," he said calmly.
Max's chest tightened. Then the breath exploded out of him as the terror simply boiled over.
"Fuck procedure! You can take your procedure and—"
Lambert held up one hand.
"I know what you're gonna say, but you need to understand. We have procedure for a reason. If I go in there half-cocked, I could get Mary Grace or Agent Thatcher's son hurt. Or worse. He'd have another hostage, and then where would we be? You need to stay calm, or I'll have to restrain you. For the sake of the two innocent people in there, will you restrain yourself?"
Max clenched his jaw so hard, his teeth hurt.
"Yes." "Good."
He got out of the car.
"Stay here, and for God's sake, don't do anything stupid. I don't want to worry about you three, too."
Max waited until he disappeared into the trees before unfastening his seatbelt. He could appreciate procedure, and even Lambert's sense of calm. But he knew Caroline was in there, suffering, and he knew what he had to do.
"David, keep Tom here. I don't care if you have to tie him up."
He turned in his seat, finding Tom glaring at him as he'd expected.
"Your mother needs to find you safe here. Please, Tom. If you love your mother, you'll stay here with